The city could, of course, go on functioning without this army of orange-vested, gray-haired volunteers, but it would feel a little less kind and a little less human. In that subtle transformation, I began to see a way forward. The Social Investment Stipend: Care, Service, and Education. Just as those volunteers devoted their time and energy toward making their communities a little bit more loving, I believe it is incumbent on us to use the economic abundance of the AI age to foster these same values and encourage this same kind of activity. To do this, I propose we explore the creation of not a UBI, but of what I call a social investment stipend. The stipend would be a decent government salary given to those who invest their time and energy in those activities that promote a kind, compassionate, and creative society. These would include three broad categories: care work, community service, and education. These would form the pillars of a new social contract, one that valued and rewarded socially beneficial activities in the same way we currently reward economically productive activities. The stipend would not substitute for a social safety net, the traditional welfare, healthcare, or unemployment benefits to meet basic needs, but would offer a respectable income to those who choose to invest energy in these socially productive activities. Today, social status is still largely tied to income and career advancement. Endowing these professions with respect will require paying them a respectable salary and offering the opportunity for advancement like a normal career. If executed well, the social investment stipend would nudge our culture in a more compassionate direction. It would put the economic bounty of AI to work in building a better society rather than just numbing the pain of AI-induced job losses. Each of the three recognized categories, care, service, and education, would encompass a wide range of activities, with different levels of compensation for full and part-time participation. Care work could include parenting of young children, attending to an aging parent, assisting a friend or family member dealing with illness, or helping someone with mental or physical disabilities live life to the fullest. This category would create a veritable army of people, loved ones, friends, or even strangers, who could assist those in need, offering them what my entrepreneur friend's touchscreen device for the elderly never could: human warmth. Service work would be similarly broadly defined, encompassing much of the current work of nonprofit groups as well as the kinds of volunteers I saw in Taiwan. Tasks could include performing environmental remediation, leading after-school programs, guiding tours at national parks, or collecting oral histories from elders in our communities. Participants in these programs would register with an established group and commit to a certain number of hours of service work to meet the requirements of the stipend. Finally, education could range from professional training for the jobs of the AI age to taking classes that could transform a hobby into a career. Some recipients of the stipend will use that financial freedom to pursue a degree in machine learning and use it to find a high-paying job. Others will use that same freedom to take acting classes or study digital marketing. Bear in mind that requiring participation in one of these activities is not something designed to dictate the daily activities of each person receiving the stipend. That is, the beauty of human beings lies in our diversity, the way we each bring different backgrounds, skills, interests, and eccentricities. I don't seek to smother that diversity with the command and control system of redistribution that rewards only a narrow range of socially approved activities. But by requiring some social contribution in order to receive the stipend, we would foster a far different ideology than the laissez-faire individualism of a UBI. Providing a stipend in exchange for participation in pro-social activities reinforces a clear message. It took efforts from people all across society to help us reach this point of economic abundance. We are now collectively using that abundance to recommit ourselves to one another, reinforcing the bonds of compassion and love that make us human. Looking across all the activities, I believe there will be a wide enough range of choices to offer something suitable to all workers who have been displaced by AI. The more people-oriented may opt for care work, the more ambitious can enroll in job training programs, and those inspired by a social cause may take up service or advocacy jobs. In an age in which intelligent machines have supplanted us as the cogs and gears in the engine of our economy, I hope that we will value all of these pursuits, care, service, and personal cultivation, as part of our collective social project of building a more human society. Open questions and serious complications. Implementing a social investment stipend will, of course, raise new questions and frictions. How much should the stipend be? Should we reward people differently based on their performance in these activities? How do we know if someone is dutifully performing their care work? And what kinds of activities should count as service work? These are admittedly difficult questions, ones for which there are no clear-cut answers. Administering a social investment stipend in countries with hundreds of millions of people will involve lots of paperwork and legwork by governments and the organizations that create these new roles. But these challenges are far from insurmountable. Governments in developed societies already attend to a dizzying array of bureaucratic tasks just to maintain public services, education systems, and social safety nets. Our governments already do the work of inspecting buildings, accrediting schools, offering unemployment benefits, monitoring sanitary conditions at hundreds of thousands of restaurants, and providing health insurance to tens of millions of people. Operating a social investment stipend would add to this workload, but I believe it would be more than manageable. Given the huge human upside to providing such a stipend, I believe the added organizational challenges will be well worth the rewards to our communities. But what about affordability? Offering a living salary to people performing all of the above tasks would require massive amounts of revenue, totals that today appear unworkable in many heavily indebted countries. AI will certainly increase productivity across society, but can it really generate the huge sums necessary to finance such dramatic expansion in government expenditures? This, too, remains an open question, one that will only be settled once the AI technologies themselves proliferate across our economies. If AI meets or exceeds predictions for productivity gains and wealth creation, I believe we could fund these types of programs through super taxes on super profits. Yes, it would somewhat cut into economic incentives to advance AI, but given the dizzying profits that will accrue to the winners in the AI age, I don't see this as a substantial impediment to innovation. But it will take years to get to that place of astronomical profits, years during which working people will be hurting. To smooth the transition, I propose a slow ratcheting up of assistance. While leaping straight into the full social investment stipend described above likely won't work, I do think we will be able to implement incremental policies along the way. These piecemeal policies could both counteract job displacement as it happens and move us toward the new social contract. We could start by greatly increasing government support for new parents, so that they have the choice to remain at home or send their child to full-time daycare. For parents who choose to homeschool their kids, the government could offer subsidies equivalent to a teacher's pay for those who attain certain certifications. In the public school systems, the number of teachers could also be greatly expanded, potentially by a factor as high as 10, with each teacher tasked with a smaller number of students that they can teach in concert with AI education programs. Government subsidies and stipends could also go to workers undergoing job retraining and people caring for aging parents. These simple programs would allow us to put in place the first building blocks of a stipend, beginning the work of shifting the culture and laying the groundwork for further expansion. As AI continues to generate both economic value and worker displacement, we could slowly expand the purview of these subsidies to activities beyond care work or job training. And once the full impact of AI, very good for productivity, very bad for employment, becomes clear, we should be able to muster the resources and public will to implement programs akin to the social investment stipend. When we do, I hope that this will not just alleviate the economic, social, and psychological suffering of the AI age. Rather, I hope that it will further empower us to live in a way that honors our humanity and empowers us to do what no machine can. Share our love with those around us. Looking forward and looking around. The ideas laid out in this chapter are an early attempt to grapple with the massive disruptions on the horizon of our AI future. We looked at technical fixes that seek to smooth the transition to an AI economy, retraining workers, reducing work hours, and redistributing income through a UBI. While all of these technical fixes have a role to play, I believe something more is needed. I envision the private sector creatively fostering human-machine symbiosis, a new wave of impact investing funding human-centric service jobs, and the government filling the gaps with a social investment stipend that rewards care, service, and education. Taken together, these would constitute a realignment of our economy and a rewriting of our social contract to reward socially productive activities. These are not an exhaustive list or authoritative judgment on the ways in which we can adapt to widespread automation, but I do hope they provide at least a framework and a set of values to guide us in that process. Much of that framework comes from my understanding of artificial intelligence and the global technology industry. The values guiding these recommendations, however, are rooted in something far more intimate. The experience of my cancer diagnosis and the personal transformation inspired by people like my wife, Master Hsing Yun, and so many others who selflessly shared their love and wisdom with me. Had I never undergone that terrifying but ultimately enlightening experience, I may never have woken up to the centrality of love in the human experience. Instead of seeking ways to foster a more loving and compassionate world, I would likely view the looming crises through the same lens as those who are deep into AI today, as a simple resource allocation problem to be dealt with in the most efficient way possible, likely through a UBI. It is only after going through my own personal trial by fire that I now see the hollowness of that approach. My experience with cancer also taught me to appreciate the wisdom that hides in the humble actions of people everywhere. After so many years as an Iron Man of professional achievement, I needed to be knocked off my pedestal and face my own mortality before I appreciated what many so-called less successful people brought to the table. I believe we will soon witness the same process on an international scale. The AI superpowers of the United States and China may be the countries with the expertise to build these technologies, but the paths to true human flourishing in the age of AI will emerge from people in all walks of life and from all corners of the world. As we look forward into the future, we must also take the time to look around. 9. Our global AI story. On June 12, 2005, Steve Jobs stepped up to a microphone in Stanford Stadium and delivered one of the most memorable commencement speeches ever given. In the talk, he retraced his zigzagging career from college dropout to co-founder of Apple, from his unceremonious ouster at that company to his founding of Pixar, and finally his triumphant return to Apple a decade later. Speaking to a crowd of ambitious Stanford students, many of whom were eagerly plotting their own ascent to the peaks of Silicon Valley, Jobs cautioned about trying to chart one's life and career in advance. "You can't connect the dots looking forward," Jobs told the assembled students. "You can only connect them looking backwards, so you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future." Jobs's wisdom has resonated with me since I first heard it, but never more so than today. In writing this book, I've had the chance to connect the dots on 4 decades of work, growth, and evolution. That journey has spanned companies and cultures, from AI researcher and business executive to venture capitalist, author, and cancer survivor. It has touched on issues both global and deeply personal. The rise of artificial intelligence, the intertwined fates of the places that I've called home, and my own evolution from a workaholic to a more loving father, husband, and human being. All of these experiences have come together to shape my view of our global AI future, to connect the dots looking backward, and to use those constellations as guidance going forward. My background in technology and business expertise has crystallized how these technologies are developing in both China and the United States. My sudden confrontation with cancer woke me up to why we must use these technologies to foster a more loving society. Finally, my experience moving and transitioning between two different cultures has impressed on me the value of shared progress and the need for mutual understanding across natural borders. An AI future without an AI race. In writing about global development of artificial intelligence, it's easy to revert to military metaphors and a zero-sum mentality. Many compare the AI race of today to the space race of the 1960s, or even worse, to the Cold War arms race that created ever more powerful weapons of mass destruction. Even the title of this book employs the word superpowers, a phrase that many associate with geopolitical rivalry. I use this phrase, however, specifically to reflect the technological balance of AI capabilities, not to suggest an all-out struggle for military supremacy. But these distinctions are easily blurred by those more interested in political posturing than in human flourishing. If we are not careful, this single-minded rhetoric around an AI race will undermine us in planning and shaping our shared AI future. A race has only one winner. China's gain is America's loss and vice versa. There is no notion of shared progress or mutual prosperity, just a desire to stay ahead of the other country, regardless of the costs. This mentality has led many commentators in the United States to use China's AI progress as a rhetorical whip with which to spur American leaders to action. They argue that America is at risk of losing its edge in the technology that will fuel the military competition of the 21st century. But this is not a new Cold War. AI today has numerous potential military applications, but its true value lies not in destruction, but in creation. If understood and harnessed properly, it can truly help all of us generate economic value and prosperity on a scale never before seen in human history. In this sense, our current AI boom shares far more with the dawn of the Industrial Revolution or the invention of electricity than with the Cold War arms race. Yes, Chinese and American companies will compete with each other to better leverage this technology for productivity gains, but they are not seeking the conquest of the other nation. When Google promotes its TensorFlow technology abroad, or Alibaba implements its city brain in Kuala Lumpur, these actions are more akin to the early export of steam engines and light bulbs than as an opening volley in a new global arms race. A clear-eyed look at the technology's long-term impact has revealed a sobering truth. In the coming decades, AI's greatest potential to disrupt and destroy lies not in international military contests, but in what it will do to our labor markets and social systems. Appreciating the momentous social and economic turbulence that is on our horizon should humble us. It should also turn our competitive instincts into a search for cooperative solutions to the common challenges that we all face as human beings. People whose fates are inextricably intertwined across all economic classes and national borders. Global wisdom for the AI age. As both the creative and disruptive force of AI is felt across the world, we need to look to each other for support and inspiration. The United States and China will lead the way in economically productive applications of AI, but other countries and cultures will certainly continue to make invaluable contributions to our broader social evolution. No single country will have all the answers to the tangled web of issues we face, but if we draw on diverse sources of wisdom, I believe there is no problem that we can't tackle together. This wisdom will include pragmatic reforms to our education systems, subtle nuances in cultural values, and deep shifts in how we conceive of development, privacy, and governance. In revamping our education systems, we can learn much from South Korea's embrace of gifted and talented education. These programs seek to identify and realize the potential of the country's top technical minds, an approach suited to creating the material prosperity that can be broadly shared across society. Schools around the globe can also draw lessons from American experiments in social and emotional education, fostering skills that will prove invaluable to the human-centric workforce of the future. For adaptations in how we approach work, we would be wise to look to the culture of craftsmanship in Switzerland and Japan, places where the pursuit of perfection has elevated routine work activities into the realm of human expression and artistry. Meanwhile, vibrant and meaningful cultures of volunteering in countries like Canada and the Netherlands should inspire us to diversify our traditional notions of work. Chinese culture can also be a source of wisdom when it comes to caring for elders and in fostering intergenerational households. As public policy and personal values blend, we should really take the time to study new experiments in defining and measuring progress, such as Bhutan's decision to pursue gross national happiness as a key development indicator. Finally, our governments will need to consistently look to one another in evaluating thorny new trade-offs in data privacy, digital monopolies, online security, and algorithmic bias. In tackling these issues, we can learn much from comparing the different approaches taken by regulators in Europe, the United States, and China. While Europe has opted for a more heavy-handed approach, fining Google, for example, for antitrust and trying to wrest control over data away from the technology companies, China and the United States have given these companies greater leeway, letting technology and markets develop before intervening on the margins. All these approaches present trade-offs, with some favoring privacy over technological progress and others doing the reverse. Leveraging technology to build the kind of societies we desire will mean following the real-world impact of these policies across geographies and remaining open-minded about different approaches to AI governance.
Writing our AI story.
But accessing and embracing these diverse sources of insight first requires we maintain a sense of agency in relation to this quickly accelerating technology. With the daily barrage of headlines about AI, it's easy to feel as if human beings are losing control over our own destiny. Prophecies of both robot overlords and a useless class of unemployed workers tend to blend in our minds, conjuring up an overwhelming sense of human helplessness in the face of all-powerful technologies. Both of these doomsday scenarios contain a kernel of truth about AI's potential, but the feelings of helplessness they engender obscure the key point. When it comes to shaping the future of artificial intelligence, the single most important factor will be the actions of human beings. We are not passive spectators in the story of AI. We are the authors of it. That means the values underpinning our visions of an AI future could well become self-fulfilling prophecies. If we tell ourselves that the value of human beings lies solely in their economic contribution, then we will act accordingly. Machines will displace humans in the workplace, and we may end up in a twisted world like the one Hao Jingfang imagined in Folding Beijing, a caste-based society that divides and separates the so-called useful people from the useless masses. But this is in no way a foregone conclusion. The ideology underlining this dystopian vision, of human beings as nothing more than the sum of their economically productive parts, reveals just how far we've led ourselves astray. We were not put on Earth to merely grind away at repetitive tasks. We don't need to spend our lives busily accumulating wealth just so that we can die and pass it on to our children, the latest iteration of the human algorithm, who will refine and repeat that process. If we believe that life has meaning beyond this material rat race, then AI just might be the tool that can help us uncover that deeper meaning.
Hearts and minds.
When I launched my AI career in 1983, I did so by waxing philosophic in my application to the PhD program at Carnegie Mellon. I described AI as the quantification of the human thinking process, the explication of human behavior, and our final step to understanding ourselves. It was a succinct distillation of the romantic notions in the field at that time, and one that inspired me as I pushed the bounds of AI capabilities and human knowledge. Today, 35 years older and hopefully a bit wiser, I see things differently. The AI programs that we've created have proven capable of mimicking and surpassing human brains at many tasks. As a researcher and scientist, I'm proud of these accomplishments. But if the original goal was to truly understand myself and other human beings, then these decades of progress got me nowhere. In effect, I got my sense of anatomy mixed up. Instead of seeking to outperform the human brain, I should have sought to understand the human heart. It's a lesson that it took me far too long to learn. I have spent much of my adult life obsessively working to optimize my impact, to turn my brain into a finely tuned algorithm for maximizing my own influence. I bounced between countries and worked across time zones for that purpose, never realizing that something far more meaningful and far more human lay in the hearts of the family members, friends, and loved ones who surrounded me. It took a cancer diagnosis and the unselfish love of my family for me to finally connect all these dots into a clearer picture of what separates us from the machines we build. That process changed my life, and in a roundabout way has led me back to my original goal of using AI to reveal our nature as human beings. If AI ever allows us to truly understand ourselves, it will not be because these algorithms captured the mechanical essence of the human mind. It will be because they liberated us to forget about optimizations and to instead focus on what truly makes us human: loving and being loved. Reaching that point will require hard work and conscious choices by all of us. Luckily, as human beings, we possess the free will to choose our own goals that AI still lacks. We can choose to come together, working across class boundaries and national borders to write our own ending to the AI story. Let us choose to let machines be machines and let humans be humans. Let us choose to simply use our machines and, more importantly, to love one another. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of AI Superpowers: China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order, by Kai-Fu Lee. Performed by Michael Naramore. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number: 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.